NASA 557, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
The Flight Safety Detectives is bringing on a new sponsor, Piston Powered, a power-by-the-hour program for owners of piston-powered aircraft that can stabilize the long-term costs of owning your airplane.
Well, hello, gentlemen. It is another episode of Flight Safety Detectives. It's almost a holiday episode.
Indeed. In a couple of days, it'll be Christmas. We're recording this on the 23rd of December, 2024.
Because we have nothing else to do except be in our respective offices doing a podcast.
Absolutely.
Well, it's good to see you guys, as always. And I think for our viewers and listeners, you know, John and I just got back from Avemco Insurance. So you're going to be seeing a lot of good things. We did a lot of recording there, interviewed people. So you're going to see those interviews interjected in our upcoming shows, because I think those of you who are interested in a variety of different types of insurances with Avemco, whether it's aircraft coverage or renter's insurance, CFI insurance, or whatever, you're going to find those interviews quite interesting. So we're looking forward to bringing that to you in the new year, as well as a revamped show coming up after the new year as well. We're going to change the format a little bit. We're going to do some exciting things, bring it. Anyway, I think we got a very interesting show for those of you who are going to buy yourself a Christmas present, such as an airplane or even a New Year's present, especially a used aircraft. One of the big things that over the years we've seen a lot of, John preaches it at the end of the show about doing a very thorough pre-flight, are the things that you can't see, the hidden things. And anybody that's ever bought an airplane and, you know, tried to either do the pre-buy inspection themselves knows how difficult it can be to identify all the little things that could compromise not only your safety, but of course, have an influence on the price of the aircraft. We've picked an accident today. Unfortunately, it was a two fatal training accident involving a relatively late model Cessna 172P, 1981 version, which supposedly, and I say supposedly because we're going to talk about the fact that there were no accurate logbook records, supposedly had a little over 5,000 hours of total flight time. And the purchaser was a flight school. Now, we don't have a very good history at all on the airplane because the NTSB didn't get into the history of the airplane, not only through maintenance records, but never even described where this airplane came from, where it had been, really what its history was, and then really never discussed in very good detail the fact that these logbooks had been, quote, misplaced during the sale of the aircraft, and that new logbooks were generated with estimates and a variety of things. And Todd will bring out a couple of statements that were identified in the public docket regarding those logbooks. But barring that, we have an airplane that's taking off on a training flight with a 77-year-old flight instructor, 20-year-old student pilot. You know, nothing unusual about that. Typical day. Let's go fly. And during the course of the initial takeoff, there is security video that shows, and there's a description in the NTSB report and eyewitness observations that shortly after departure on the climb out, the airplane rolled uncontrollably and ended up in the ground. Two fatalities. The NTSB went out. They did their on-scene investigation. They did document a key finding, which then formed the basis for the probable cause. And that was the failure of an aileron cable due to corrosion. And in looking at the report, okay, it sounds relatively easy. It sounds like it's an obvious probable cause. Cable failed, lost control, airplane crashed. But that's just a tenth of the story. There is still 99.9998% of the story that hasn't been told. And it really should have started with the historical background of this aircraft. It's a late model airplane. It's being operated in Florida. So now you have environmental conditions. We have not just surface corrosion on the failed control cable, and John will talk about that here in a minute. But again, when you look at the just the pictures, you don't even have to read anything about these cables. You just look at the picture, you know that this airplane has a sordid history,
to say the least.
Todd, starting it with you, looking at the docket and some of the unique things that you saw in there, especially in these regenerated maintenance logbooks, you don't just, you know, buy a new logbook and, you know, put an entry in there and put a notarized statement in there going, we think that this is the time. I mean, the FAA requires you to do a lot of different things to create a new set of logbooks. That's why a lot of airplanes don't sell if there's lost logbooks, is because you literally have to dismantle that airplane and prove its airworthiness.
You know, one of the things I saw was they had maintenance records, reconstituted maintenance records. And toward the end, there was an affidavit from the widow of the person whose airplane was sold. Her husband had died. About a year later, they sold the airplane. And she says, in part, my husband gave the original logbooks to a particular who was a mechanic, and the mechanic misplaced them. Not only do they try and reconstitute the logbook, but they also said something like, oh, there was a friend of his who flew it for X number of hours in a certain time frame, but really there was 108 that were documented, plus there were 50 other hours that weren't documented. I don't know about you, but if I had buying a used car and it had this sort of sketchy background to it, I'd be really suspect of the quality of what's under the hood. And well, again, given what we've seen with the pre-buy inspection on paper, it was inspected, but as you told us off the air, if anyone had done an inspection, they would have clearly seen that there were issues with that control cable.
Yeah, and John, that, you know, again, when it comes to satisfying the FAA and making a determination that the aircraft is in an airworthy condition to satisfy the type certificate, I mean, you can't just go out there, do a visual, take a flashlight, look up in the inspection panels and call it good.
No, in fact, with this kind of aircraft, obviously it had sat on the ground a hell of a lot more than it was in the air. If I was doing the check, I'd be tearing this airplane apart. Although I will tell you, I'm looking at the pictures, I am baffled and pissed off when I look at this airplane went through a pre-buy, and how they didn't see this cable in this condition is beyond me.
Yeah.
I mean, just, you know, as I started to read it and then I saw the picture, just my blood started to boil. I just can't believe that somebody would pencil this. And that's clearly the indication we have here that the mechanic who did that pre-buy did nothing. He penciled it. He didn't look, because you couldn't miss this one if you looked at it. These cables run behind the backside of the wing before they enter into the top of the fuselage. There's no way in hell that he was looking at that.
Yeah.
No, and I haven't said so before, the pre-buy inspection was signed off, I believe, on August 27th. April 27th. And the accident occurred May 26th, less than a month later. So
you got to be kidding me.
In my opinion, there's no way that amount of corrosion could be developed.
Oh, it's impossible. You could put it in sulfuric acid and it wouldn't eat it that fast.
According to the NTSB docket, the pre-buy report that's in it was done by A Plus Aviation Services, LLC, out of Deerfield Beach. Of course, you know, it kind of looks official. They they talk about discrepancies. Transponder, alternator, beacon light are all in op. Lower skin flap has heavy corrosion. Okay. ELT battery is expired. Number 3 and 4 cylinders with oil leak, and right hand magneto during run up dropped 150 RPM. So then when you go and, you know, you look at the visual inspection, opened up panels to inspect attached connections of cables. Propeller for any cracks, blah, blah, blah. They don't find anything wrong in all of that. And they're using supposedly all work performed relative to the Cessna 172 maintenance manual checklist. That's all bogus because, you know, looking at this picture, and of course, Todd will embed this picture so you'll see it. Don't take our word for it. Look at this cable. And John, the thing that stood out, I think, to the three of us initially when we looked at the cable, besides the necking, which means that there's an overload stretch, was the fact that this isn't surface corrosion. This is corrosion through and through that cable. And yep. If this airplane is supposedly only has, you know, 5,000 hours of flight time, you would never see corrosion like this, or shouldn't see corrosion, unless this airplane was sitting underwater for a while, you know, to really soak through that cable.
Yeah, that corrosion is through and through. The corrosion that was discovered on the lower side of the flaps.
Yeah.
This cable lives just above that.
Just above it. Yeah.
I mean, so if he did an inspection on that lower surface, how the hell did they miss this?
And again, based on the description that the NTS materials lab that was talked about in the factual report. And again, there are some telltale characteristics that not only maintenance people can have a better understanding of, but they talk about aileron control continuity was not confirmed. Separation was noted in the aileron cable system in the vicinity of the upper left doorpost, right direct aileron control cable. The pulley was removed, examined, and exhibited corrosion. The pulley had corrosion. The pulley did not move freely. Okay, so now you got a hung-up pulley, which means the cable is not riding over that phenolic wheel. It's dragging over it, which you should have felt resistance in a flight control check. The upper right doorpost left direct over pulley was removed and examined. The pulley did not rotate freely, and corrosion was noted. So now you got both pulleys that are jammed up, and you're dragging that cable over the top of it. Several other breaks noted in the aileron cable system were consistent with tension overload failures. And again, they weren't doing aerobatic maneuvers. They didn't have high aerodynamic loads to do this. So those loads were one against the resistance of those pulleys. But, you know, now you got an issue with the cable, the corrosion, and then, of course, the deterioration of the cable itself as it was starting to stretch and break in tension. And the materials lab wrote, the examination of the aileron cables at the NTSB MATLAB revealed that several wires exhibited uneven, localized thinning either at the separated ends or along the length of the wire. So now you're doing a control check. You're, you know, running the ailerons back and forth, you know, again, and that's why you really want to do these with some fidelity. You want to have a technique where you can feel possibly that this thing is hung up because it's got resistance to it, or you can feel the ratcheting that may take place as those thinning spots are running over the pulley and things like that. You don't just go out there and yank and bank this thing and go, yep, they're good to go because the ailerons move. You're looking for other things. You're trying to feel tactily other things that are going on in the hidden portions of the wing, then the fuselage all the way into the control yoke or into the pedals or whatever that you cannot see. And it said, pockmarks consistent with corrosion attack were observed on the surfaces of numerous wires. So not just one, numerous wires. Some of the wire ends had necked down with cup cone fractures visible, while other wires had no thinning or angle fractures at the end. The cable ends tapered to a point and localized thinning of wires and shedding of material was noted, as well as pockmarks. How in the hell can you do an inspection, even if it's a cursory visual inspection, and not see what they just described? This didn't happen after the accident. This happened well before the accident. And oh, by the way, it didn't happen in just a month. This was a long-term process. So this guy or whoever did this pre-buy inspection said, I checked all the cables. Everything was good to go. Guess what? You didn't, because you sure didn't open up the panels and you sure didn't look at all of this stuff. And oh, by the way, given the fact that you don't have an original set of logbook records, I mean, you should have been, you know, doing this at 250%, not at 50%, you know, trying to make a buck on a pre-buy. And then unfortunately, two people were killed because of, you know, your bad work.
And one of the things that about this report is that, well, clearly from what you've been reading and what we've all been reading, there were some, how should I say it? They fell short in many ways when it came to managing this aircraft. There's nothing in this report about the management of this flight school. What was it about the way they do business that allowed this to happen? That wasn't investigated at all.
Yeah.
You know, just from the flight school, how do you buy an airplane new to you, right, from somebody, and throw it right into service without doing some work to it?
Especially when you don't have any logbooks.
Right. So, I would call into question that piece of this report. So the report says that the logbooks turned up distance lost, and they had to recreate them. Doesn't say when they had to recreate them. The fact that the inspection took place less than 30 days before the accident, I mean, that raises a big red flag in my mind. Right?
Yeah.
When did they come missing? When did you start to recreate them? Were they recreated before the pre-buy or after the pre-buy? They didn't ask that question in any of the documentation.
Yeah.
So the sleuth work leaves a little bit to be desired.
And where's the information about the mechanic who lost the logbooks after the, you know, family gave this person the logbook? Did they give him the logbooks a year before, 2 years? How do you lose the logbooks? How do you misplace them? You know, those questions. And then the bigger question is, what did the FAA do about all of this? There is nothing in this report. Did the FAA take action against the flight school? Did the FAA take action against the mechanic? Did the FAA do anything with the person? And it doesn't give the credentials of the person who did the pre-buy. If they do have an AMP certificate and or an IA, did they take any action for doing such a lousy inspection or pencil whipping this inspection? Where's all that? Because all of that is part of cause and contributing factor, not just going to the obvious that a broken cable resulted in a loss of control. That's a ridiculous probable cause. That just tells you the obvious. You didn't need to leave the office to figure that out. The FAA could have looked up there and said, yeah, we got a broken cable. Great. But that's not aviation safety. And that is definitely not aviation safety enhancement. How did this chain of events come together to lead to the loss of two lives?
You know, that's the disconnect we've been seeing in so many reports. So it's not surprising that the NTSB just doesn't dig into those the way we used to, especially with GA, especially with their budget condition that it's in. There's lots of reasons, some valid, some not so valid. This report contributes very little to ongoing safety. It does have one big piece, the corrosion on the cable. So that should raise the awareness of not only people who operate and buy airplanes, but also the mechanics doing the inspections and the pre-buys. You know, you buy an airplane to put it in service, you do a pre-buy inspection. Wouldn't it be wise to do a 100-hour inspection before you put the thing to work?
Well, again, I mean, the red flag here was the fact that it didn't have logbooks. I mean,
yes.
You don't have to have, you know, a rocket science background to just even Google. You know, I'll tell you, I just did it just for the hell of it. Obtain a new logbook. Okay, great. You go buy a brand new logbook. You got to gather all the existing information that you can. Okay. So you're going to be looking for work orders. You're going to be looking for any kind of notes related to this airplane. You're going to be, you know, calling the FAA and, you know, Oklahoma City, trying to get all of their aircraft records to see what if 337s, you know, was there any major alterations in repairs, things like that. So you're going to have to do all of that. Of course, you're going to have to try and track the history of this aircraft. And you go back to the guy who turned the wrench on it and go, tell me about all of that, what you did. Now, I want all your work orders. I want to know what you've done, any mods you've done. I mean, so there's a lot of record, you know, investigation there. You have to look at AD compliance. That means you got to go through the entire airplane with an AD log and make sure that all the ADs have been complied with.
On the one hand, I can understand things being, how should I say it, a little less strict when it comes to private sales, because as we all know, you can fly strictly adhering to the regulations and still be an unsafe aircraft or unsafe pilot. And I can see a private sale where this sort of oversight or lack of oversight is an issue. But it calls into question, shouldn't there be a little bit more set of, a higher set of requirements if you're sending an aircraft into a flight school, no matter what the history of this aircraft was?
The FAA has a standard. You have to prove airworthiness. You cannot prove airworthiness of this aircraft with those logbook records. The FAA will not accept it. And that's why it's like, where the hell is the FAA in all this? Did they take any action against the flight school? Did they take any action against the mechanic? Because that's the enforcement tool, is why didn't you do these things? Why didn't you suspect this? Didn't this raise a red flag? Why didn't you question this? And then why did you put this in service? Before you, I mean, because technically that airplane, when it went into service, was not airworthy.
Clearly not airworthy. And you know, when the date when the logbooks went missing is critical. You know, if let's say the logbooks were available when they did the pre-flight, and he did a poor pre-buy inspection, and maybe anticipating they were going to not put it right into service. Right, so he made an assumption they were going to fix work on the airplane after they bought it. When did the paperwork disappear? Because the paper trail was what's going to get that mechanic who did the pre-buy in trouble. And the FAA doesn't usually do very good jobs of playing detective. It's paperwork detective. They're good at the paperwork. They're not so good at the physical part of it. You know, the vast majority are not that good at it.
This whole situation doesn't pass the smell test. Again, if I'm buying a vehicle of any kind, car, boat, airplane, etc., and some of the basic things you would expect, hey, do you have maintenance records? Do you have a record of oil changes for a car? Do you have a record of 100-hour inspections for this airplane? And you come to me and say, you know what? We lost all the records. Well, I'm going to either A, not buy that aircraft, or B, seriously discount my offer for that aircraft. Because I'd have to figure in, I'd have to do all the reasonable things you're talking about, a teardown inspection, et cetera, to get that airplane to a level where I trust it in the hands of a 20-year-old student.
A very invasive inspection, which can and often does uncover major flaws that you wouldn't have seen until you did a 100-hour inspection or an annual inspection. Right? And B, it raises the risk of breaking things while you're disassembling, which has a cost of its own. You know, and one of the things that in the report, some of those cable pulleys were frozen. You find that out when you do invasive inspections.
Yeah, well, the inspection paperwork says, open the panels to inspect attached connection and cables and check the free movement of the flight controls. The NTSB found they were frozen after the fact. How come this clown, or whoever did it, didn't find it at the time of his or her, you know, free movement of flight controls? I mean, it's just, this is criminal. And this pre-buy inspection was worthless. It's written with, I don't know, 12 or 14 font, double spaced, and it takes up barely a page. Yet, I mean, just us talking about this, I could have probably picked out 3 pages of stuff that should have been looked at.
And think of the instructor and the student pilot. It's not their responsibility to do this level of investigation of every airplane they fly at the school. There could be however many airplanes that are out there. They have to trust that the management of the flight school is doing their job. And frankly, you know, if I knew that a flight school did this to one aircraft, I would suspect every aircraft.
Well, absolutely. And that's why, where is the FAA in all this? And where is the discussion about the flight school? I mean, do they have an in-house maintenance program? Do they depend on third-party maintenance? Did they have a third-party maintenance guy look at this aircraft before, when they accepted it, before they put it into service? Again, there's a thousand questions that still need to be answered. Literally, this probable cause is worthless. The National Transportation Safety Board terms the probable cause of this accident maintenance personnel's failure. What maintenance personnel? Maintenance personnel's failure to detect the corroded aileron cable during recent inspections, which resulted in the separation of an aileron cable and a subsequent loss of airplane control during takeoff. That's it. Again, you don't have to leave the office to figure that out. Just send me the picture. Yep, I could have wrote that. The fact is that this does not do anything to enhance aviation safety. It tells me the obvious. How does anybody benefit from this? You know, and the fact is this a isolated event, or is this, you know, something that can continue on and on and on? You know, especially since this is a flight school. Are they still in business? Are they still operating this way? Is this still their practice? Are they still buying Hangar Queens and putting them into service?
Yeah, there's a lot of pieces there that they should have highlighted.
And it's just
corroded cable is the only beneficial thing that has come out of this accident.
Well, and it's not just corroded. And John, you know, you worked on these cables. Yes, there's going to be times when there's corrosion on them. That's typically surface corrosion. And oh, by the way, and we'll post it on our website with this video. There is a 12-page corrosion program that Cessna puts in the maintenance manual. It's very comprehensive. It talks about corrosion. It gives you all the different types of corrosion, intergranular and a variety of other ones. It tells you what to look for. It tells you what to suspect, where to look, how to correct the respective types of corrosion. It goes on for 12 pages. It's very informative. And if you're a pilot and or an aircraft owner, I would suggest that you download this and put it somewhere in your reference material, because when you're looking at your aircraft during a pre-flight inspection, you're going to find corrosion on a flight control surface or on a piano hinge or whatever. This kind of information is good for you to determine whether or not you got a major problem before you take that airplane into the air. And again, I do not understand. I mean, you know, okay, so 2023, yeah. We had all these pilot factories up and running. Everybody's trying to make a quick buck because of the hiring boom that's going on right now. This is just criminal. You put a 77-year-old instructor with better than 17,000 hours of flight time with a 20-year-old young female student trying to learn to fly, and you put them in a compromising position. You know, I mean, that's just, it's just sad. And I mean, it's just, it's very hard to talk about these things without getting them, you know, all fired up at how criminal this is. And where's the FAA and what's happened? What's the follow-up to all of this, to the players involved?
And I think this segues into my second to last word, because all of us here, I think, we're kind of worked up over this because we see so many obvious failures of doing the right thing, failures of initiative by overseeing officials like the FAA. So I'm inviting everyone who's watching this, we're going to make a special effort to put a whole lot of the supporting documentation on the page about this episode. I want you to download it and come to your own conclusions as to what can be done or what should be done, especially in the organizations you're either working for or working with or a student within their program.
I've been a little bit quiet because I had to bite my tongue. I grew up as a mechanic. I worked as a mechanic all my life. Mechanics have hang of language, and it was right there at the tip of my tongue, and I had to bite my tongue to keep it from coming out. A guy who does an inspection like that needs to go behind a dumpster for a little bit of re-education. It is criminal, Greg. It is criminal. But we just don't have a system in place that would, the system being the FAA, that will rise to the occasion that when they need to. Make a paperwork mistake, they're right there.
Yeah. Well, you got a flight school, you know, you buy an airplane and they go, oh, sorry, we can't find the logbooks. Really? Pass.
Yeah, that's why I think there's something smelly in that part of it too. Because, you know, at that point in time, I don't think there's anybody in aviation that wouldn't say, hold on a minute, let's take a look at this. I think another set of facts occurred between the buying of the airplane and the accident.
Yeah. And we know going into this new year with a new administration and some of the chatter that's been out there, when you look at the FAA and its structure, you got the administrator leaving, you got the deputy administrator leaving. There's going to be a lot of vacancies at the top of the stack. If the government is downsized, where is that downsizing going to happen? You know, of course, we've talked about it on this show ad nauseum about the fact that the FAA is typically underfunded and undermanned. So now what does that mean as far as, you know, oversight and enforcement of not only large air carriers, charter operators, any kind of certificate holders, but even flight schools and just the general aviation community as a whole? You know, what's going to happen with all of that? I mean, and how many more of these types of accidents? We've talked about it on this show. The concern I have, because I sit on the board of the National Association of Flight Instructors, is that we've had just an unbelievable increase in flight instruction related accidents. And that's because they took the function of flight instruction certificate issuance from the FAA and passed it off to DPEs. And the quality has suffered. And we're seeing it now, because these pilot factories are trying to generate pilots because of the hiring boom. So it has a very expansive ripple effect. And I think, unfortunately, going into this new year, we're going to be talking a lot about a lot of these issues with the accidents that we review, especially the more recent accidents.
You know, I had a very interesting conversation with a retired FAA person, retired for a number of years. And it's about all the press releases about bringing the government people back to work. Most people don't realize that a vast majority of the FAA employees are working from home. They don't ever go in the office. And the government is pushing to reverse that. What you hear from FAA people is, I'm not going back. I'll retire. And like you, I said, you know, what are we going to do? We're going to lose that expertise. Well, this FAA person told me, he said, that may be a blessing in disguise. He said, because we'll get rid of a lot of these people that have been taking up space and doing very little, and bring in some fresh blood, bring in some young energy. And he shut me up because there's a lot to be said for what he was saying.
Yeah, and that's true. And I mean, there are qualified people. It's just a matter of how do you, just like the air traffic controllers and everything else, you get a shortage. How do you backfill all those positions with high quality people in a very short period of time? Because you have to have a good basis of practical knowledge coming in, learning the system, learning the enforcement actions and everything else of the FAA. I mean, that's a whole process. That's time consuming. It's resource intensive. You're not going to bring in everybody up to snuff like right now. And I was just down at Embry-Riddle, and we'll save it for another show, but they've got approval now where they got a direct program for their air traffic controllers coming out of their program, going right into a facility that will help expedite bringing this young talent in, who's going to have a very good, solid background with air traffic control and all of the updates to the air traffic control system, which will help ease some of that burden. But that's just a very small part, John and Todd. So we're going to have a lot to talk about coming up in this new year. We hope that you've enjoyed this last year's of our programs. We look forward for your continued support. Again, we're always looking for financial assistance because we put this show together, but we're bringing it up hopefully not only a notch, but maybe 10 notches for the new year. And so, again, We appreciate all your feedback. Continue to email us because we've learned a lot from your questions and accident suggestions and things like that. So going into 2025, we wish you all a safe and happy new year. And John, I'll let you close it out with your one famous tagline, and it's not about pre-flights. It's just closing the show out.
Well, I got two this time because both Todd and I teach at Vaughn College, and Vaughn College also has approval for their ATC to go direct. And to all of you out there flying over this winter, please fly safely.
Thank you for checking out our show. We really value our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you and how much you like it. So please give us 5 stars in your podcast platform.
We want to keep in contact with you. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're on YouTube, we're really working on growing the channel, and it helps if you all send in comments. Please do that, and we read all the comments.
And be sure to subscribe. Remember, if you're in the market for aviation insurance, you can save 5% with Avemco just by mentioning our show. Visit them at www.avemco.com. That's it for this episode of the Flight Safety Detective. Until the next episode, fly safe.